welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by John Murphy, who's serving as our worship associate, and several participants in our worship arts team who are also joining in with me in leading the service this morning. We'll be singing several lines from a song later in the service. The song was sung by a folk group, Magpie, at a folk concert, building off a line from the NAACP branch organizer and civil rights leader, Ella Baker. Ella Baker was a powerful leader in the civil rights movement, and she often provided trainings in various places for others who wanted to be a part of that movement. And very frequently, she titled the trainings, "Give Light and People Will Find a Way." We light our chalice this morning with words from the 19th century Unitarian minister, John Haynes Holmes. "When I say God, it is poetry and not theology. Nothing that any theologian ever wrote about God has helped me much, but everything that poets have written about flowers and birds and skies and seas and the saviors of the race and God, whoever that may be, has at one time or another reached my soul. The theologians gather dust upon the shelves of my library, but the poets are stained with my fingers and blotted with my tears." We light our chalice this morning with gratitude for all the poets who speak to our hearts.
Well, it's time for a confession. I'm not a big fan of poetry. Actually, I thought I wasn't a big fan of poetry because I don't read poetry on a regular basis. I don't own poetry books. At least I think I don't. I don't write poetry. Heck, I don't even think I'm particularly romantic. That is until I started to think about today's service and this call to worship. You see, the beauty of poetry is that it just happens. Some words on paper touch the heart because their rhythm is like a heartbeat. They have a steady cadence and rhyme, like a song. When you hear a song that you love, it touches your spirit and you join in. Sometimes the heart is in love. Other times the heart is broken. It aches and it cries. At times the heart is angry and the rhythm is fast. It pounds with anger like fist on rocks. Other times it screams with passion as well as terror. Some songs express this passion. They may be loud, angry, fast. We might not like some of them, but to others, it's poetry. Poetry is born from the heart, but sometimes it makes you stop and say, "Hey, wait a minute. My brain needs to process that." And so you stop. You read it again. You linger on that last line until you say, "I get it." Or, interesting. And even, "I have no idea what the writer was thinking." By definition, poetry should elicit some type of emotion. Good poetry will touch the soul and the spirit, and great poetry will lift it so it soars high above our own physical being. Today, we bring you many forms of poetry, from the old classics to newer whimsy, from personal romance to ones that soar like a bird. You'll hear poetry spoken and in song. Today we wish to touch your heart, your mind, and your spirit. Come, let us worship together and join us in song for our opening hymn, "Let This Be a House of Peace," which is an adaptation of a poem by the early Unitarian Universalist minister, Kenneth Patton.
Many years ago, I was married to an alcoholic. And in my journey of recovery, I started going to Al-Anon, a wonderful 12-step group for people who are dealing with addiction in their lives. And I came across this poem, or part of this poem, in the little book that contains readings for every day of the year. And the first couple lines of this poem really stuck with me, because the silence was what I hated the most when I was all by myself in the house. And this poem reminded me that it was okay. So I share with you this morning Desiderata. Go placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexations to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter. For always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love. For in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace with your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy.
And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, you have been threatened this week. We've heard war and rumors of war. Frightening times in Israel and Gaza and Iraq. Frightening times in Russia and Ukraine. We hold in our hearts all of the people whose lives have been tragically broken this week by explosions on the ground and that tragic explosion in the air. We hold in our hearts and in our prayers every person whose life has been lost this week, whose life has been broken this week. Spirit of life and of love, you have been threatened by the individual tragedies and the larger collective tragedy that we carry on our shoulders as we witness this devastation. Spirit of life and of love, you have been threatened. And so we gather this morning to pledge ourselves anew to lift you up, to join our hands to open our hearts, to focus our minds so that we may be agents of your power, the power of life, the power of love, to heal, to bless, and to find a better way. May it be so, and amen.
Hero is not a word I use lightly in my vocabulary. There are very few to whom I can ascribe that word. This woman, whose words I will attempt to interpret, was a hero of mine. Maya Angelou was one phenomenal woman, the title of one of her many pieces. I cannot say when she came into my life, but I know that that beautiful, rich, raspy voice cut right into the heart of who I am. She spoke to me, and she speaks to me still. The piece I share with you today is written of her experience, of her sometimes difficult life. It speaks to my spirit because she tells me, she reminds me of my inner strength, my courage, that in all the difficulties that life may toss or throw my way, I can do this. I am surrounded by the love of my family, all of my families, especially my church family. I offer you Still I Rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? 'Cause I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hopes springing high, still I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries? Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't take it awful hard, 'cause I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean leaping and wide, welling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Into bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise. I rise. I rise.
Well, I've become a bit of an Anglophile recently. As some of you know, we were just fortunate to holiday in England both this summer as well as last summer. And I also went to school in England for 4 years. Shakespeare's always been a favorite of mine, and this is one of his most famous sonnets. In fact, it's one of the most famous sonnets ever written. Shakespeare was a very confident young man. He moved from Stratford-upon-Avon at the age of 18 to London because he knew he would become a great playwright there. He built the Globe Theater just outside of London to produce his plays, and the reason he built it outside of London is because London was under Puritan rule, and nothing fun was going on in London at that time. This is a lovely sonnet. It compares the beauty of the subject to a summer's day. Shakespeare even goes as far as to make the summer look less perfect in comparison to the sonnet's subject. At the beginning, he says, "Should I compare you to a summer's day?" Well, actually, you're even more lovely than that. Next month, Kim and I will have been married 25 years, and when I hear this poem, I always think of her. To me, Kim hasn't changed a bit in all the years I've known her, and she's as beautiful as the day I met her. To me, Kim is as lovely as a summer's day, and even more so. So Sonnet 18, shall I compare you to a summer's day? Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease has all too short a date. Sometimes too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often in his gold complexion dimmed, and even fair from fair sometimes declines. By chance or nature's changing course untrimmed, but thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou oust, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
So just as John is, I am somewhat poetry challenged. often I read that. I read poetry and I sometimes end with, interesting, rather than some uplifting bit of inspiration. But my poem is, it's not fancy or exotic, but it's something that I found back in college when I felt like the chips were really stacked against me, and I kind of felt like Rocky, you know, I'm getting just beaten down, you know, and it's like, oh, what else could go wrong, you know? But, you know, it's something that even when you are getting beaten down like Rocky, you know, he just comes up and he's like, bam, you know, and next thing you know, he wins, right? So I think it's a testament to sometimes how you got to remember that it could be so bad, but you could be really close to breaking out and having a moment of, you know, clarity. So I offer you the poem, Don't Quit. When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, and you want to smile but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is strange with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a failure turns about when he might have won had he stuck it out. Don't give up, though the pace seems slow, you may succeed with another blow. Often the goal is nearer than it seems to a faint and faltering man. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup. And he learned too late when the night slipped down how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of clouds of doubt. And you can never tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems so far. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit, and when things are the worst, that's when you must not quit.
I've just come back from a week at Summer Institute, and the theme of Summer Institute was a journey of change. And so I've been reflecting on change a lot this past week. And it seems to me that one of the changes that's coming for me is growing old. I turned 50 recently. And you start thinking about growing old at that point. And there are reminders all around me. My hair's getting gray. My parents are getting old. My cat's getting old. But if I'm lucky, I'm going to have a few years yet to observe and appreciate the process of growing old. So this is a poem that conveys the way that I hope that I'll be able to embrace the aging process. It's a poem about growing old, together. The longer we're together, the larger death grows around us. How many we know by now who are dead? We who were young once now count the cost of having been. And yet, as we know the dead, we grow familiar with the world. We who were young and loved each other ignorantly now come to know each other in love. Married by what we have done as much as what we intended. Our hair turns white with our ripening, as though to fly away in some coming wind, bearing the seed of what we know. It was bitter to learn that we come to death as we come to love, bitter to face the just and solving welcome that death prepares. But that is bitter only to the ignorant who pray that it will not happen. Having come the bitter way to better prayer, we have the sweetness of ripening. How sweet to know you by the signs of this world.
It's hard to believe, but I am starting my 10th year serving as the minister of this congregation this year. And people ask me, colleagues ask me, "You're still at Kent?" And I say, "Yes, I love it. It's a wonderful congregation." And today lifts up just a few of the reasons why. All of the musicians who are playing in our folk orchestra today were just at this church camp you've heard people talking about, busy all week long. And Hal asked them, "Will you come to church 9:45? No, they needed to be here at 9, right? On Sunday morning after this intense week and play. And they said yes. And these worship arts leaders, some of whom you hear today, are not necessarily best friends with poetry. I say, "Will you pick out a poem that you love and tell people why it speaks to your spirit? It's an intimate thing to do." And they said yes. So many ways in which people in this congregation share their gifts. It's a beautiful community. So some of you, maybe, are people who are not best friends with poetry, and others of you are. Wherever you fall on the spectrum in your relationship to poetry, I'd like to make a suggestion to you that someday when the weather is right or your mood is such that it seems to fit, consider having poems before your breakfast. It's not an elegant metaphor, but try it out here. Because there are as many poems as there are breakfast options. Certainly. You could have a poem that's as plain as a bran flake, as sweet as a glazed donut, as savory as an omelet. You could have a poem that is as unfamiliar to you as a dish you might get for breakfast in another country. There are poems for every appetite. And just as breakfast is an important meal that gives you the nourishment you need to do the work of your day, to share the love that you have to share with the world, a poem might be just the nurture you need for your spirit. To do the work that you're called to do, to share the love that you have to share. There's a poem for every appetite. M- Most Sundays I stand up here and offer you some kind of reflection upon our theme, but you've already heard so many reflections today. And so now I'd like to give you an opportunity to provide your own reflection. Consider this a kind of choose your own adventure Sunday. There is a process, a spiritual practice, a method. It's called Lectio Divina. Lectio Divina is Latin, and it means divine reading. This is a practice that has very ancient roots. It was well established as a spiritual practice in monasteries by the 6th century of the Common Era, especially used in Benedictine communities. And it's been having a kind of renaissance in recent years, Lectio Divina, divine reading. And so I would like to give you an opportunity to try this out. You can consider this a prayer practice. You can consider it a centering practice. It's a spiritual practice that helps you engage a written word and find what it has to say to you. Find what you have to say in response. Take it into yourself, like you might your breakfast, and let it give you the nurture that it might offer for your work in the world. So there are four parts to this method. The first one, lectio, is reading. You read the word. The word might be scripture. It might be a poem. It might be prose. You choose the word that you'd like to read, and you start there, lectio. That's part one. The second part is reflection, meditato. You reflect on the reading that you've chosen to listen to what it has to say to you in particular. The third part is response, oratio. This is where you discover what it is you have to say to the poem, to the divine, to the universe, to yourself. You choose. You choose what response is stirring in you. And the last part is resting, contemplatio. And this is where you let the word that you have chosen settle into you, become a part of you, so that you can carry it forth with you. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to practice this Lectio Divina method of spiritual practice this morning. And I'd like to suggest that we use the same poem. So if you could find a gray hymnal, you might have to share with someone else, and turn to 490 in the back. This is a poem by Mary Oliver. Wild Geese. And so as we begin with the first part of the method, Lectio reading, I invite you to read this aloud with me. Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. After reading comes reflecting. And so this time I will read you the poem, and you can read along silently if you wish, or you can close your eyes and just listen to it again. But this time as you listen to the poem, I invite you to reflect on what it has to say to you today. Is there any message for your life in this poem today? And I invite you to listen to see if there is a word or two or a short phrase, no more than three or four words, that have particular meaning for you today, that call out to you. So listen to see if there are just a few words that resonate with your spirit as I read to you again. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. So if you found a couple of words or a phrase that speak to you, I invite you to take a moment now and reflect on the message those words have for you. This is not an intellectual exercise. It's not about dissecting the words. It's about letting them into your heart and listening to your heart to see what those words might have to say for you. So take a moment for reflection. The next movement of the spirit is responding. And so having listened for the message for you, this is your opportunity to craft a response. Your response may be to yourself, to your own heart. Your response may be to the universe. Your response may be to your community. The response may be to God. You choose. If you were doing this at home, you might write your response. Take a moment and offer your response as a prayer. What do you have to say in response to the message you heard? The last movement of the spirit is resting. This is a time to give thanks for the gift that you have been given. To renew any promises you would like to renew. And if you take this home with you and try it with scripture, poem, Sunday this week, find a way to end your practice, maybe by singing a snippet of a song. Give light and people will find a way. Give light and people will find a way. Give light and people will find a way. People will find a way. You, should you reach a moment someday this week where you're not sure what the right thing to do is, where you stumble a moment uncertain, let the song be your guide. Breathe in peace, breathe out love. Amen.